and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis. I wanted to start this podcast because it felt like there were lots of roles, be it in distribution, marketing, programming, post-production, or even on a film set, that don't get the attention they deserve. Likewise to the women doing those jobs. I'll be interviewing guests on how they got their start in the film industry, what it is they actually do, what keeps them motivated, and what their ambitions are. Hello, pod pals. How have you been? I had a pretty good week for film watching. I managed to catch Brady Corbet's Vox Lux. Apparently it's Corbet like sorbet, the palate cleanser, not Corbett like Ronnie. Who knew? I also saw Sebastian Lelio's Gloria Bell. Both films give a platform to two of the finest actresses working today in the form of Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, respectively. So anyway, this week I've got another glorious guest in the form of Becky Ashdown. I first came across Becky in the work that she does at Together Films at the Open City Documentary Festival in 2017, where Becky spoke about social change and the role or responsibility of documentary filmmakers within that. I knew then that she occupied a very unique position in the industry as someone that straddles the world of film, but also politics and non-for-profits, and as someone that can speak to changing models or approaches to distribution. Becky is campaign director at Together Films, a marketing and distribution agency that offer bespoke solutions and strategies for films looking to reach a particular audience, especially in the realm of issues or topics that have the ability to spark conversation and positive change. So I was absolutely thrilled when Becky agreed to come on the pod, and it came as no surprise that there was lots to talk about. Becky's had an incredible and varied career working for the likes of BBC, Amnesty, BFI and TIFF, and I think she's testament to the idea that just because you don't start out in the field you have an interest in or can even identify that field, it doesn't mean you can't navigate and learn your way into a fulfilling career. Frankly, I felt very fulfilled and seen by this chat. We spoke about working freelance but not putting the free into freelance, approaching people you admire, including that time Becky wrote to Louis Theroux, and having a network of friends that can champion you to you. As ever, I hope you enjoy it. This is episode 8 of Best Girl Grip. People appreciate sort of having peers and seeing what they're doing as almost role models more than seeing, you know, producers that are getting Oscar nominated, because it just seems more tangible to see someone in the kind of career path that you're taking and maybe like 5 or 6 years ahead of you. And tell me more about you and how it all came about and what your background is. And so this kind of grew out of a blog that I've been keeping for about 8 or 10 years now, just as like a film review blog that it started out as, and female directed films have always been the kind of thing that I've been most interested in. And then I thought, podcasting became a bit of a phenomenon, and I was like, well, conversations with women are something that you don't often hear, especially not as, you know, and that I was getting in. I've been at the BFI for a year now, and then before that at various different kind of female-led companies. And I just thought, these are roles that I'm only discovering as and when I'm in the job. Like, I didn't know marketing exists until someone gave me a chance to do it. And I didn't know distribution kind of existed until I was suddenly in it.
And I was the same, like,
yeah, you're kind of learning on the job. And I just thought, wouldn't it be great if someone could have said to me that role maybe existed before I was doing it? So that's sort of,
I got really excited preparing.
I love a fellow preparer. I love a list.
So we've got, like, those people. Chloe Trainer, who runs Open City, she's just amazing.
She does something for overnight as well. She's still brilliant for that. I'm going to start this week.
Me too! I've never been there yet.
And then I saw it as the last one, and I was like, oh my gosh, why?
Because Costco is an old friend, I was like, I've got to go this year. So, do you know Georgia Paris?
Yes, I actually just interviewed Emma Duffy, who produced Mari.
Amazing. Okay, I'm going to mention Mari, that's my film.
Oh, great.
Georgia's a really old friend, so we're going together.
Great. So I'll see you there. Oh my gosh, amazing. So obviously you're quite big in the documentary sort of space. That's where you're working now.
Yeah.
But you didn't come from there. So how did you get into documentary?
How did I get into documentary?
As I'm aware, you came from the NGO sector. So can you talk me about maybe like what you studied and what your career path looked like from there?
I have done a billion different things in my career and education-wise. Went to University of Nottingham. I should also say, like, I'm from Leeds, went to a comprehensive, and I think it's really important when you're talking about your career to mention those things, because I think a lot of people think you have to be from London to work in the industry, and yes, I've got loads of my experience here, but, you know, I'm not from London. Mm-hmm. I am Northern, I'm not proud of my culture roots. So I took a year out when travelling. Originally had a place at art college to do textiles, and I was going to do the art foundation, and then halfway through my travels kind of thought, oh, I'm always torn between, do I want to do something in the arts and something creative, or something kind of social justice, international development to change the world. And to be honest, that is the thread that runs through the whole of my career, this kind of
balancing of the two.
Balancing of the two, and how do you use the arts to change the world and start conversations. And so I ended up doing social and cultural studies at Nottingham, and really didn't particularly enjoy Nottingham, if I'm honest.
Why was that?
I think, considering I'm such a planner, it's a bit weird that I didn't go and visit the university.
Right.
I applied when I was overseas, doing the whole gap year thing. I was probably like in Southeast Asia, did the applications. Applied for several unis, got into all of them and thought, I don't know anyone going to Nottingham. It'd be fun to do something different, go somewhere new. Sounded, you know, like it had an interesting kind of creative scene there.
Yeah.
And then when I got there, I don't know, it just took me a while to find my tribe. And I felt, I was quite aware at the time of being from the north, being with a lot of people who'd been to private school, and just it feeling really jarring. And don't get me wrong, there was diversity, and like all the friends I made that I'm still friends with now, that, you know, my best friends in the world, they were all fabulous. Some went to comp, some went to private school, is better. I think in my first week, the fact that someone said to me, what's your name? What does your daddy do for a living?
No.
And another person didn't really want to seem to talk to me because I was from the north. I just found that very, like, what is this?
Jarring.
Having grown up in a really diverse, multicultural city in a school, like, super diverse. It was just a bit of a shock to the system. Though in retrospect, now that I'm older and have gone through working loads of different industries, those sort of skills I learned then, and that experience of being confronted with people from very different backgrounds, and, you know, that's been really valuable.
So you talked about having a keen interest in the arts. Did you know then that that came in the form of film, or was it sort of any form of arts?
So initially my thing was theatre and textiles, sculpture as well, randomly as a GCSE. I was really big into theatre and acting and devising work, and at one point, you know, always from the age of about three, thought I was going to be an actress and didn't know that there was anything else you could do in theatre and film. And then got to, 18 and thought, I don't think I'll be able to, A, I'm not sure if I'm good enough, but B, I don't know if I can cope with the insecurity of, like, going to audition after audition. And I was also very aware at that age of the pressures that are put on women. You have to look a certain way, you know, your career. Well, hopefully that is shifting now. And also, obviously, again, when I was preparing, I was kind of thinking, pre-fifth wave feminism?
Yeah.
Because I grew up at a time where, I mean, I called myself a feminist.
Mm.
My mum was both my parents were, you know, really big on women's rights and equality and treating me, my brother the same. And I grew up with a group of very liberal and friends where we would go to protests and we were kind of all politically aware. However, I had a lot of friends who were like, no, feminism, we don't need that anymore. Come on, Bec, get over it. It's 2002. And like, they would never dream of calling themselves a feminist and think it was weird that I was like celebrating International Women's Day. Yeah.
Whereas now you feel like if that opinion was held, it would be met with a bit more resistance.
Yeah.
Like, people would be like, what are you even talking about? It would just be shut down.
Well, I just remember when the Women's March came around in 2016? Yeah.
So the Trump
one. No, the first.
Yeah, 2016.
Being so delighted that there were friends going on it who were just so excited by it that 10 years ago, more than 15 years ago, they would have never dreamed of.
Yeah.
Anyway, segue. But yeah, theatre was a massive thing for me, and I worked at West Yorkshire Playhouse as my sort of during school, so when I was 16. Yeah. 16 onwards, during school and then university holidays. And that was just amazing because I got to see loads of stuff and learn about the backstage side of things and meet actors and ask questions and meet directors. And that was Jude Kelly, was the artistic director at the time. And I remember that being
a big thing
that, it's when you look back, isn't it? But it was something that really stuck with me. I was like, there is this amazing, strong, powerful, super smart woman running this whole theatre, and that's really cool.
And did you think maybe that's what you wanted to do, like running theatre, or what kind of went while you were working there?
Still sounding out what was possible. Mm. Like at that point, it was probably still on the acting side of things, and I also did some like theatre education stuff there, uh-huh. which then led on to things I did a little bit later in life after university. So I did a master's as well after Nottingham. I came to London.
Yeah. What was your master's then?
I worked for a couple of years, mm-hmm. so I'll talk about that in a moment, but then I did applied theatre at Central School of Speech and Drama in Swiss Cottage. So it's a 1 year course, mm-hmm. and the full title is something like Theatre and Education in Drama and Community Setting. No, Theatre and Drama in Community and Education Settings.
So like theoretical, not a performance master's.
It wasn't being a performer, but it was very practical in that it's about how do you make art participatory and how do you make it inclusive, mm-hmm. and how can you go into, well, how can you make work with different groups who may not usually have access to making theatre and film. So I went into prisons and did some workshops in prisons in Doncaster, and got some funding to go to India and did a project in a school there that was just about bringing a community together where there were lots of tensions in that community, mainly about religion, and then getting the teachers and the students and the parents to all kind of devise work together, exploring and picking apart, like, why is this discrimination happening? And
have you seen a documentary called The Work?
Yes.
That's like one of my favourite, and that just kind
it's like very much
applied.
Massive crossover with that. And actually my interest in that and kind of the use of testimony and verbatim theatre, which in some people call documentary theatre, that kind of led me to working in film, really. Yeah. I was quite interested in documentary for a long time and working out what could I do within it. Maybe I could be a researcher or...
And when did the idea of those different roles kind of come to you? Because I think of documentary even now and think filmmaker.
Yeah.
It's perhaps the one role that, you know, I or anyone else could possibly name.
When did I learn about those kinds
of roles? Like that you could research for documentaries or the distribution or whatever it was.
I'll go back a step because it kind of leads to it. So my first job out of uni, moved down to London, didn't know what I wanted to do, apart from I didn't want to work for the man, and I wanted to do something meaningful that was going to make a difference in the world, which now in retrospect just feels so cheesy and a bit naive.
But you are.
that was kind of my main principle. It's funny because I had other friends. I remember one friend who... She's like, I don't know what I want to do, but I just want to be able to rock an awesome pencil skirt and say to her, I was like, okay, great.
The 9-to-5 chic.
Which she did, and she's very successful. So I worked for the Royal Society of Arts, RSA, and that was, in many respects, the organisations that ticked a lot of my boxes, where it was doing creative arts-based projects, working with designers and artists to realise amazing projects. So they sort of led on a lot of the fourth plinth projects and worked with people like Jeremy Deller, but then they also did kind of research projects and test, like pilot projects.
Okay,
a bit of a think tank really with around like education and making education more creative and the refugee crisis. And they had this lecture series where you could, so it's a member organization, and then the members could come to these lectures like a couple of times a week, but that was just for me learning about the world. Mm. That was such an amazing place to be, to like see Helen Bamber talking about what the Helen Bamber Foundation do to support survivors of human trafficking, and then the next day an artist would be in talking about his process, and then a filmmaker would be in there. So that was like a really great place to just, very eye-opening to learn about what different roles and things there were in the world.
That's the one now, the lecture series.
Yeah, it does, And I think you can go as a member of the public as well. I don't think you have to just be a... But why do I mention that in terms of documentary? Oh, I guess because I met documentary filmmakers then. I was in fundraising and events, and I was there about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and realised that I don't want to be raising money to not be involved in the projects.
Right.
I wanted to be, like, getting my hands dirty.
So you'd get the money in and then sort of hand it over to whoever was managing the project.
Yeah.
Right.
And I found that frustrating, because so I was like, no, I want to be in the heart of making stuff happen. Something had been, like, itching inside of me that, but I've always thought I'm going to work in the arts in some capacity. So maybe you sort of asked me that question earlier and I didn't answer it honestly. I guess I had always just thought, well, of course I'm just going to work in the arts in some... I don't know what that's going to be and how I'm going to make that work, but...
it will happen. Because of, you had a creative impulse. Like, you did sculpture, obviously, at GCSE, so is that sort of where it's coming from?
Creative impulse and just thinking that's my tribe and that's what makes me tick and excited. And I had a cousin who was a stage manager and really, you know, really successful. She was at Sheffield Crucible. I guess seeing that she could have a successful career in theatre in some ways inspired me, because I thought, you know, no one else in my family was necessarily doing it.
Was RSA a full-time job?
So yeah, that was a full-time permanent job. Pretty terribly paid for, but standard kind of graduate role. I remember my mum at the time thinking, God, what are you doing? I just quit without anything else sorted, because I was like, it's going to be okay. I'm really restless. I need to do something different. I need to test the water and do something maybe more theatre-y.
And sometimes you need that fear, don't you? Like, you're not going to explore it if you're in that full-time position. You kind of need to take the leap first and then be like, and now find my way.
So that's what I did. Which, yeah, was probably a bit irresponsible, living in London with London rent and nothing else sorted. But then I was super lucky. At that point, I'd sign on to do some acting classes to see if that's where... Just to, like, test the water and be like, is that what I'm wanting to do? Is that what I'm missing? What is this? Let's explore this.
Yeah.
I also started volunteering at East End Film Festival. And I think it was at that point as well, I then got a job at Rich Mix Art Centre as, like, a...
box office?
Yeah, box office assistant, like, box office events assistant, just to be like, right, I'm going to throw myself into a venue to learn about what people are doing, learn a bit more about roles and responsibilities and make contacts. And but then in terms of being really lucky, because that was just kind of, you know, a couple of nights a week extra money stuff, my boss from the RSA had left the RSA to go to the BBC, to their international development charity, which at the time was called BBC World Service Trust. They changed their name now to BBC Media Action. And she got in touch the week I was leaving RSA saying, hey, I hear you're going, because she must have left a few months before me to move to this new job. I hear you're leaving RSA, would you book for some freelance work for a couple of months? Like, yeah, sure, amazing, I need something. And yeah, I ended up working there for maybe almost a year and a half, 2 years.
And that was always freelance?
Or that was always freelance.
And did you know what that meant at the time?
That was the first time. No, I didn't know what it meant. I was a bit terrified. It was the first time I'd ever been freelance.
Yeah.
Had to register for my taxes.
I feel like that's a massive growing up. Like, whenever anyone, when you go freelance, I feel like that was the moment I became a real adult. Because you suddenly just have to, like, manage your money so much smarter and just be aware of where it's coming from.
Definitely. And making sure you invoice on time and making sure you save enough for your tax. And I think, if I'm honest, it's only really recently in the last couple of years that I've got better at the whole expenses thing. Because I didn't used to expense for anything, which in retrospect is a bit silly.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's so many things.
There's so many things you have expense for. But I was like, well, although I'm freelance, I'm going into an office, I'm not spending loads of my own money at that point. But yeah, there are things you can do.
Absolutely. So a year at BBC Media Action. And what exactly were you doing for them?
I was doing cultivation events. They are... The reason I mentioned them is when you said about how did I get into documentary, because they... That was being part of BBC and they're producing content. Mm. And that was, like, I was definitely learning more about filmmaking and documentary and what that is.
But essentially, yeah, how that segue worked for both you and the boss that kind of went from RSA to BBC, like the transferable kind of nature of what you were doing.
Yeah,
worked definitely. For both of you.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot as well when I was... Yeah, thinking about some of the questions you sent over for today, like transferable skills and some of the things I learned really early on in lots of different roles and roles that were nothing to do with the film industry. They're very transferable for like stuff I'm doing now. And yeah, when we talk about my role now in more detail, I think I can only really do that role because of the combo of having worked in film and understanding that side of the world and distribution and contacts in the industry. Also some of the skills I've got from working in NGOs and how to write funding applications. And
there's still an economic element, obviously, so learning that basis back then. So cultivation, sorry.
So cultivation, basically fundraising events, writing to inviting donors who could be individuals, but also like trusts and foundations, corporates, inviting them to come along and learn more about the organisation and then ideally support financially. Right. But that sort of meant working with a lot of journalists who would host these events and producers. We had people like Alan Yentop, Mariella Frostra, So that was kind of my first, well, I should guess at RSA I probably had like talent kind of handling. And I feel like in my career I ended up doing a lot of working closely with talent in different capacities.
Is that something you enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, they're just people. But I guess I mention it because when I work with people who don't work with talent, they think it's super exciting. Like, ooh, you must meet so many celebrities. Yeah. And I'm like, nah, it's just part of the job and the people. But you need to think to do your job well, you need to just see them as people.
Yeah.
And not be starstruck.
Yeah, it's always better if you don't know what they're in or what they're famous for.
Because, like, if I was interviewing someone to join my team, I would be looking after people. I wanted to know, you know, I want to know that there's someone I can trust that is not going to ask for a signature or,
a photo, a selfie.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not appropriate.
Yeah, completely. And how is it working at BBC? Did you enjoy working for a big, kind of established brand like that?
Yeah, I did. And I think, if I'm honest, the fact that I worked for a couple of big established brand organisations, like BBC, BFI, Amnesty, I have liked that. I don't know if that's my ego, or I think it's sort of, it's getting to a certain point in your career or working with a sort of calibre of organisation.
Did you feel like having them on your CV then changed things for you?
I do think that was probably very useful because it makes you stand out in some respects. It's funny as well, when you've been in a city a certain amount of time, you've had a career for, how long have I been working? 2006, 13 years. And like the building, I was based in Bush House, which isn't even a building anymore. Yeah. Like that's not even a thing anymore. And the organisation changed their name and their focus has probably changed a lot. But no, at the time that was definitely a time when I was thinking about documentary. Because I remember writing to Louis Theroux.
Oh, cool.
I found that he was in the same building as me. And I'd see him in the lift sometimes. And just one day I sent him an email saying, Louis, I'm kind of exploring what I'm doing with my life and career. Would you free for a coffee so I could tap your brain? Mm-hmm. And I think he must have been going away shooting at the time. But he sent me a lovely email back.
Oh, that's cool to know. And sort of, he wasn't too big. He was there.
No, he was lovely. And actually, I think of other people, like a little bit later down in my career, who I wrote to when I was just trying to get more knowledge, work out what was going to be the right fit for me and where I could use my skills. And I wrote to Kim Longinotto, So Kim Longinotto is an amazing female filmmaker and British. She didn't really say female filmmaker. And I was a huge fan of loads of her docs because it's that sort of crossover. Lots of female focused stories, but with issue-based elements I'm interested in. And so I wrote to her. Somehow I must have got her email. And she replied like 5 minutes after receiving my email saying, hi Becky, here's my home number, give me a call and let's have a chat. Amazing. I was like, wow. Called her and we chatted for like 2 hours and she was just super useful, giving me lots of knowledge and probing me with lots of questions. Same with Christo Hurd at the time, who runs Dartmouth Films. I don't know Christo, because now I work with him sometimes in different capacities, and I don't know if he'll remember that. He probably won't. I might have to remind him. But he was really lovely at sharing lots of knowledge in the email.
I feel like that's something that I've learned massively, is that just ask people for a coffee.
Yeah.
Like, people that are very willing to talk if you kind of show an interest in them. I'm really bad at networking. I hate just being in that sort of environment where you feel forced to ask questions, whereas to do it on your own terms has definitely been something that's helped me a lot.
I think that is really good advice to pass on to anyone. Like, ask someone, definitely ask them for a coffee and compliment them and show that you have done your research and you're interested in who they are. It's not about sucking up, but I've had people come up to me at screenings who don't know anything about the company, my role. They just know that I do something in film. Here's my details. If any of you have any jobs come up, maybe you could give me a call. And I was like, what? No!
That's not how it works!
And there was one girl who I actually said to her when that happened, I said, like, I really want to help you in the future, but that's not the way to go about things.
Yeah.
Just ask people, ask people for a coffee.
Exactly. Did you have any other mentors that kind of helped you?
I guess, yeah, there were three people who really came to mind. I guess I never had, like, official mentors. Awo Ablo, who was my first boss that I mentioned, who I ended up going and working for at BBC. She was just such an inspiration to me because of the way she kind of held herself, and she was incredibly smart and warm, but also set boundaries and was very good at saying no, which I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and it's taken me a really long time to learn how to do that. But that's kind of one of my other bits of advice, like set boundaries. Because I think we all know, having worked in this industry, set amount of time, like some elements of it can really suck you dry if you don't set boundaries and say no.
Especially because it's a creative career, I often find that it bleeds into other aspects of like my life.
Yeah.
So it's quite hard to know when kind of 6 p.m. rolls around and you're still sort of thinking about
work. I think that happens a lot with passion projects that kind of cross between I really care about this and I really want this to be a success versus this is my job.
Yeah.
That difficult balance.
How have you learned to kind of set boundaries for what works for you?
Not taking on so many things. I used to like want, especially when I think back to when I started out working, I'd say yes to everything. So I was like, well, I don't know who I'm going to meet there. Mm. And you don't want to turn down opportunities because you don't know who you're going to meet or what they might turn into. Mm. And especially when you're freelance, there's this thing of you're only as good as your last job. So now, how do I set boundaries? Yeah, saying no and actually valuing the knowledge I have now and the skill and the experience and not doing things for free, or at least valuing them enough to charge. Because the amount of people who I would love to help who send me films or ask for advice, and if I did all those things, I probably wouldn't be paid. I wouldn't be able to eat, because there's that balance of as much as you want to help and support people, especially when people are starting out in their career and nurture them, you also have to value that your experience.
Yeah.
But because where I am now at Together Films, we're trying to grow a small business, the amount of people who want free consultancies and want support, if we helped all these people, we just wouldn't be putting in enough time for the paid work to make it sustainable. So we have to sort of draw a line on certain things. Mm. I have to mention them because they've been so influential to me. Michelle White and Anne-Marie Flynn, who were both bosses of mine, managers of mine at different periods of time at the BFI. And the way they're both similar but different women, but I guess the thing I would say about what I've learned from them is that everything they do with grace and integrity. I often think, like, what would Michelle do? Because she would handle the most difficult situations with just so much grace. And I think people have so much respect for her and Anne-Marie that I want to emanate that.
Because they could handle pressure.
Yeah, handling pressure, but, you know, without losing your shit, or not losing your shit in front of your team or in front of audience members or talent, or yeah, just incredibly composed and juggling a billion different pieces, but doing it with so much, yeah, grace is the word that just kind of comes to mind all the time.
What were you doing at BFI?
Oh, I did lots of different roles. And I feel like the BFI is, especially BFI South Bank, is almost like a second home. They're like a family, so many. The organisation's like a family to me. My first job was working for London Film Festival. So I think I was hospitality assistant. Then I did loads of different roles at LFF. I did industry coordinator, guest services, lots of events, but mainly event-focused kind of roles.
Okay, for like filmmakers that are coming through the festival?
Yeah, taking them through that festival journey and sort of hand-holding them and being with them the whole way to make sure that they know what's happening, they know where they need to be, you get them on stage and off again. When I turned 30, I just sort of hit a bit of felt like I just was not moving up in the industry and I couldn't work out how to, and I couldn't really work out what I wanted to do next. And so many of the roles within film festivals are short-term contracts. Yeah. And I just wanted to gain more knowledge about international sales and just kind of get some knowledge outside of the UK and London. So I went to Canada. I worked at TIFF for a year.
How did you do that? Like, in terms of getting visa?
So yeah, the reason I mentioned being 30 at the time was because I knew that that was the last year I was going to be able to apply for a visa. Because I think they may have changed the rules now. This was, what, I'm 35 now, so it's 5 years ago. But at the time, you could only go up until you were 31. And it'd been something that had been in the back of my mind, like, oh, maybe I'll go to Canada at some point. You know, that's an option. In terms of, you know. So I saved a bit of money, travelled for a couple of months, mainly visiting friends. Yeah, friends in the US, and went to Brazil. And that was the only way I could afford to do it, just by staying with people.
Sure.
But also wanting to learn more about the industry. So I was trying to meet people in the US who worked for organisations that inspired me to have coffees. I went to Tribeca Film Festival just to kind of do some networking and learn about who does what and how did this work. Okay. And then got to Toronto and I had the visa, but I didn't have the job yet. So I went all the way to Toronto without the job, but because of the nature of when the roles open up and they're all short-term contracts, I'd done my research so I knew when things were going to be advertised. I'd been in touch with the teams that I thought I wanted to work for to get some insight into, like, when will, you know, how many roles will you be recruiting? What's the salary? What's the skill set that you need? So that I knew, like, how realistic it was for me to go out there and get a job. I remember when I first got into Toronto, I got the bus from New York, and I arrived and went straight into the Tiff Bell Lightbox building and just, like, to put some positive energy out there, being like, right, I have arrived, I have no job yet, but you're going to give me a job and I'm going to learn lots.
And did you?
And I did. I got three different, I think, did I get offered three jobs and I took one? Or maybe I got interviewed for three, got offered two. Yeah, I got offered, like, an events role and then a guest services role. Mm-hmm. And I took the guest services one because I thought that I'd gain more knowledge there.
Why was that?
Because I thought it was going to give me more access to sales agents and distributors and producers to learn more about who they were, what they're you know, how they operate, what they're doing. Which I think it did, yeah.
And was it those three things that you were sort of thinking that's maybe why you wanted to head into?
Because I remember at the time, like, I'd heard about markets and I didn't really fully understand what they were.
Because there are different worlds of festivals, although they take place at festivals.
Because I worked for London Film Festival, that was a public-facing festival. Mm-hmm. And I knew that TIFF was a lot more, well, it was definitely a public festival. Like, Toronto goes wild for it, and the whole city.
Yeah, they love it.
Just comes to life for it. But I also knew that, like, real big business happened there. And I wanted to learn more about how that all operates. I mean, I probably learned things without realising I was learning them.
Yeah, just by doing of being in the room.
Yeah, and seeing different, and, you know, bumping into people. Some people I knew that I met at other festivals, and
it starts to become a very small world.
Yeah, and that's something, again, I was thinking about a lot with this, when you asked me to be part of this, like, the people you meet along the way, who you don't know what everyone's going to end up going on to do. So be nice to everyone.
Yeah, that's so true.
A, be nice to everyone anyway. There's no need to not be nice to people. But I think about one of my interns in my first ever role on the London Film Festival. And I, you know, didn't really fully know what I was doing because I was learning so much at the time as well. Remember, that was when I was really learning, okay, this is what a publicist does, and this is what a sales agent is, and this is what a distributor is, and these are the differences. However many years forwards to being at TIFF, and that intern is now one of the senior programmers at Picture House Central.
Wow.
Picture House. And the same with loads of instances of people that were assistants to me or volunteers who have gone on to be in really different and also decision-making roles, which is why, you know, it's really important that I hope I treated them with kindness and respect, and that if I need to make a call, hi, can you give me some advice on this, or hi, I'm applying to your foundation for some funding, that they won't think back to, she was my manager and she was an ogre, so no, I'm not gonna help her out, or and vice versa, you know.
And do you also feel like it's beneficial to have had lots of different roles at lots of different organisations, because you're therefore exposed to that many more people? Because I often get anxiety about the short-term nature of the contracts I've done and thinking that it just looks bad, but actually that's quite a positive.
I agree completely. I think, especially my generation, I was definitely told, there was this expectation when we were going through school that you would probably have one job for a very long time, and I say my generation, I don't know if it was more that I just learned that from, like, my parents' generation, that this idea of jumping around was often seen as a bad thing, and having loads of jobs in your CV, was something to be, like, not necessarily to be proud of.
Like, to, like, explain away.
Yeah. Whereas, now that I've been and done it, and done billions of different jobs, I do think you're right that I've met people and learned so much in all those different worlds that to other people, they might, if someone's looking at my CV, they might not fully understand how everything joins up. Mm. But for me, I do, and think there is a real crossover between lots of the roles I've done. And now that I'm working on this project, I can call someone from that project and vice versa. And also offer opportunities to other people a lot of the time. Hey, I know you have expertise in this, and I'd love to bring you in for this.
And, and how long were you at TIFF for?
Just one festival, so it's about a 6-month contract.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't think about it, or you couldn't, or you didn't want to renew?
Well, that was kind of interesting. I loved being in Canada, and I loved the different, it definitely felt like a slower pace there in terms of more sort of work-life balance. And I was at a point where I was really appreciating that and like cycling to work and not worrying that I was going to get knocked over by a double-decker bus. I don't know, I just really loved Canada. I was really lucky that I met some amazing people out there. But because of my age, I wasn't going to be able to get another year's visa. Whereas I had some friends who were younger, who went out by sort of weird coincidence. It wasn't planned that way, but they could stay longer because they were younger. And I did look into sponsorship opportunities. It was clear that it's going to be really hard to get sponsored by TIFF to be able to stay. But also I met with quite a few producers. And at that point, I was very much learning, but really interested in doing more of this sort of impact distribution work. Yeah, so at that point I came back ready to try and give the impact thing a go. But ended up sort of slipping back into a role at the BFI. Sounded like a great opportunity to learn more, and so I ended up working in the events team at BFI South Bank for about 3 years. Anything more than a film screening, our team was producing red carpet premieres, Q&As, panel discussions. And then we were also doing the combo of public programme facing stuff, partnership events. So setting up partnerships with other local festivals and different organisations, but also private hires. So a lot of that was industry focused, so working with people like Universal or people who wanted to hire the building for different events. But also sometimes that wasn't always film industry focused. It was working with big corporates because that was just an additional way to bring in revenue and to support the organisation and to support the public programme facing stuff. So
what was that like? Because it must have been around like the event cinema boom, because I remember a time when Q&As didn't exist, and now that's just how a film is released into the world. Was that kind of around the time you were working at BFI that it sort of became much more?
Well, I guess that's something that BFI's always prided itself on. It's always, you know, that's what makes BFI South Bank such an amazing place to be, because sometimes it'll be the only place you'll get to see a Q&A with one of these amazing filmmakers.
Well, they just did like the Fleabag premiere, didn't they?
Yeah, Phoebe exactly. Oh, Phoebe. And I remember Phoebe from when I was starting out, like 2007, 2008, when I was doing theatre stuff. Some of my many random jobs, working at loads of music festivals one summer. And she did lots of work with Nabokov Theatre Company. I don't know if she's one of the founders, maybe, but yeah, it's really nice seeing how successful she's becoming. I think that actually a lot about, I don't know, it's just lovely seeing people grafting and working really, really hard and trying and making mistakes. And
when you know that it's not an overnight success.
Because like Kate Tempest, when I did that random job at Rich Mix, just the box office assistant, not just box office assistants, but super important and valuable, so like the front face of people coming into a venue. But yeah, on Sundays they used to have live jazz and poetry. And that's when Kate was performing. That must have been, again, like 2007-08. People like Soweto Kinch, and they were all like honing their craft, and now they're
selling albums.
It's brilliant. It's really, it's just really lovely to see.
So you're at BFI and events team for 3 years. And from there,
you're really good at pulling this down. And I'm like,
where did you go from there?
I left the BFI April 2017. I had an amazing time there and learned so much and had the most incredible team, like real dream team of people that always had my back and vice versa. We were like such a family. But it was time for a change. There was a restructure and I thought, okay, it's either now or never that I try and give this whole impact producing thing more of a go. Because I've been dipping my toes into different projects over the years and trying to work out how I could do that sustainably. So then I started working with Sarah Mosses, who founded Together Films, and went full-time with her. And at that point, it was just the two of us. We've now, in that time, grown. Two and a half of us, Izzy, team assistant, who was like did a couple of days a week. And now there are five of us.
And talk to me about what is Impact.
The company kind of evolved and emerged out of this idea of impact distribution, which is something that sort of, I mean, I first became aware of maybe 2010, 2011. One of the many jobs I was doing was at Amnesty and working with artists to try and amplify different campaigns. And I was trying to do more projects with film. So we did a project with film starring Gail Garcia Bernal.
Is it Pinochet?
All about the advertising campaign that brought down Pinochet.
Pablo Larraín directed it.
Yes, it is. It's Pablo Larraín. Yeah. Oh,
I love it when there's like, you know, because I watched it ages ago and then put two and two together when I was like watching Jackie or something. And I was like, oh my god, this is so good.
Yeah, such a beautiful filmmaker. That was the first, for me, my first experience of like, how can you use film to open up a conversation around an issue and try and get people engaged in signing a petition and campaigning on an issue.
Yeah.
So we worked with Pitch House and worked with Pitch House Cinemas and Network Releasing, who were managing the UK distribution. And we did about 25 coordinating screenings all around the UK with ex-prisoners of consciousness from Chile, who are UK-based, who would be at every screening to do a Q&A and talk about how the film related to their own personal experience. Then we'd have amnesty campaigners and kind of local groups at each event as well, taking signatures and being present to talk about the campaign with audience members. And I just found it really fulfilling and rewarding, that sort of connection between campaign and film and storytelling as a way of getting people to understand an issue more and empathise with it and then want to take action.
Yeah. And to act on it, because obviously the empathy is probably at its greatest.
Yeah, just definitely. And I think a lot of the time people see things and they don't know what to do, but we were there saying, well, these are really specific things you can do. So yeah, I mentioned that because that was my first real like, oh, how do I do more of this? Mm. And who's doing it? And at that point, it didn't really feel like anyone was doing it in the UK. So I was researching and creating my own little, like, you know, Google Sheets and lists of, like, okay, how can I learn more about this? Well, there's people called Film Sprout in the US and Participant Media. I was discovering that most of the people doing this kind of work were in the US. So it took me a while to work out how I could actually do it myself in the UK.
Why do you think that was?
I think there's more of an appetite for funding that type of work in the US. It's still hard to get the funding to do this kind of work. There's traditionally a lot less money to support those kind of campaigns. There's also a lot less money for distribution than production. I think, I don't know, maybe with like US attitudes, there's just more of an appetite and a market for it as well in some respects.
So what do you do for Together? What is your role?
So my role at Together now, so like I said, I've been there officially almost 2 years, but have been doing freelance work with Sarah on and off for about 5 or 6 years. It's when she first started founding the company. So I'm campaign director, and that means I do a number of different things, but as a company, we are a marketing distribution data agency. So we specialise in kind of working out with any film, who is the target audience of that film and how are you going to reach them? What are the best distribution platforms and distribution strategies to release that film? So, you know, not all film is cinematic, and I think a lot of filmmakers really romanticise that idea of wanting their film in cinema, but that's not always where their audience are. So we sort of think about creative ways of taking film to people, and a lot of that is non-theatrical screenings, which is basically taking film out of cinema, off Netflix, into community spaces. And you know, we do screenings in schools, universities, art centres. Yeah, and we often really work in real close collaboration with people who want to host their own screenings, where we'll sell them a screening licence and sort of give them the tools and the assets to do that. But then they can host the event in their own creative way, which I think can be really empowering to people. And often they will understand their audience more than we do.
And do you operate in conjunction with distributors, or are you sort of ancillary or kind of instead of?
So we do a number of different things. We do so many things that it's sometimes quite hard to explain it all, because I sort of mentioned partly about the distribution side of things there, but we also do marketing and outreach. That might be doing all for one's film, or other times it's working with an established distributor. We've been working with HBO for the last year on a film called The Tale.
And the Jennifer Fox film. Yeah. Oh my god, I love that film.
So we're working directly with Jennifer and Simone, the producer, but also kind of in collaboration with the team at HBO International. So they own the international rights to that title, and we've been brought in to help sort of amplify the conversation that's happening around the film. Mm-hmm. So it's about child sexual abuse, and it's Jennifer Fox's personal experience of that. A lot of people who might watch the film on HBO or some of the other international platforms that they have service deals with, they might need support after watching the film, so we're sort of partnering with different helplines, hotlines, charities, NGOs who people can call and talk to if they want support after they watch the film. But then we're also working with therapists, counsellors who are hosting their own screenings and using the films as a sort of training development tool for people to, for support workers to kind of understand where some of this abuse, how some of this abuse happens and escalates, to understand the survivor's experience a little bit more. Yeah, it's been, we've been basically working with a really broad range of strategic partners. We did a big event at the UN back in October, oh, cool. And that was about taking the film to policymakers and specifically to people working in the sporting world. So the abuse in the film happens in a sporting context. And I think, as we all know from Lioness the Case, and sadly many horrific cases, you know, there is a lot of abuse of power that happens within sport. It was about taking the film to people who are actively working in that field and getting them to kind of think how they can put more better safeguarding in place for protecting young people, and how they themselves can use the film as a training tool for the coaches that they work with. And
is it quite a creative role in that respect, in that you kind of board a project and then it's...
Yeah, I think in some ways I'm kind of a cross between an event producer, an event producer, a sociologist, a marketeer. Yeah, it can get really creative. And I guess one of our big philosophies as a company is like, how can we turn everything upside down on its head, shake up the system and explore what are the other revenue models available for kind of ensuring that filmmakers are going to be making some of their money back, or that you're having the intended impact you want your film to make. Sometimes you have to become a bit of an expert, a pseudo-expert on an issue. So that means, like, you know, getting deep in working with therapists on something, or can think of other chances we worked on when I've had to learn about, you know, diseases I didn't know anything about and immerse myself in different communities. What you're doing it with integrity. In many ways, we sort of were trying to amplify the work that lots of other activists and organisers are already doing. So we're not like taking full credit for this film changed the world. This film could maybe be a little ripple effect in hopefully having an impact on a particular issue.
Is there a project that you've worked on that you're proudest of?
Oh, I guess I'm proud of all of them. I think Unrest, that we released October 2017. Really proud of that on so many different levels. We had very specific impact. The filmmakers, I should say, who built the strategy for the film, the whole project before we came on board, had really specific impact objectives for what they wanted to achieve. So one of those things was to do a screening in Parliament and for politicians and policymakers and funders to put more medical research, put more funding into medical research on this issue of NE. One of my colleagues, again, credit where it's due, it wasn't me that organised the screening at the House of Parliament, but my colleague Lucy Wilson organised the screening at House of Parliament in collaboration with a number of different charities. And because of that screening, and I think because of the film as a whole and the campaign it was having across the UK and the conversations it started, there then went on to be the first ever debate in Parliament about NE, where the film was referenced several times. And there's been people in kind of campaigning on this issue for so many years and not having their voices heard, not having the respect that they deserved. And then finally this film was something that got people, got politicians to listen, and then go on to have this debate. So it's like NE CFS is much more higher on the political agenda now. From a professional kind of industry side of things, the film went on to be Oscar shortlisted, and it was the only film out of 15 that had been creatively distributed.
Okay.
So all the other films that year, you know, had big marketing.
Yeah. Studio money.
And we were doing that on a real shoestring with support from Sundance, BFI, private funding. I was like super proud of the amazing team of people we worked with to make that happen and, you know, to get that recognition.
What's the biggest challenge of that role?
Funding, always.
Where do you get funding from? How does that work?
So as a company, we mainly get funding from filmmakers who have found the funding from different partners to pay us for our time to manage a project. So sometimes that might come from someone like a traditional film funder like the BFI, but other times that'll come from private trusts and foundations. It's very varied. One of our challenges is like constantly working at how we can make the business sustainable and how we can keep doing the amazing work, or keep trying to do amazing creative work and like having an impact, but ensuring that we're having a sustainable company, keeping afloat and growing.
And does it feel to you like the perfect collision of your interest in the arts with your interest in social issues.
Yeah.
Has that kind of prophecy come true?
It really has. I'm very lucky. You know, I'm constantly learning more on every single project we do, which is, you know, why it's so wonderfully rewarding and exciting about the role that I'm in, especially because I have quite a lot of sort of creative control and autonomy around some of the projects we work on. And
who is a woman filmmaker that has made something that you think is undervalued?
Good question. All these questions are so good. And then I keep thinking of a billion more things I could say in each of them that I haven't said. So a female filmmaker who I'm a huge fan of, who made her first feature this year, is Georgia Paris. Who's a dear old friend who I met through my first ever job at the BFI.
Oh, cool.
She was volunteering. It was my first really junior role. I've been following her work since she's been making shorts and first feature won the microwave scheme.
So for those of you wondering, Becky is talking about the film Mari, directed by Georgia Paris, as mentioned. I spoke about this in quite a lot of depth with Emma Duffy, the film's producer, last week. So if you haven't already listened to that episode, I would definitely recommend going back and hearing all about the process, about how that got funded and made.
And then premiered at LFF. It's kind of a combination of drama and dance. I think she's like a really... A, she's my friend, but I just think George's vision and her drive is something to really, for everyone to keep a real eye on. Definitely when we're talking about undervalued, the silence of others.
Ooh, I feel like I've heard that. Tell me more.
Silence of Others is an amazing, one of the best films I saw last year. One of the best films I've seen in a really long time. Mm. It's about the Franco regime in Spain, and it's co-directed by husband and wife Robert and Almu, who were just... beautiful, beautiful humans, but incredibly talented, and have made this masterpiece that, you know, not so many people in the UK have seen it as yet, so definitely keep an eye out. Oh, another film I loved a couple of years ago, So Young Kim's film, Love Song.
I love her films.
With Jenna Malone. I love that
very
film.
Cute. Yeah.
And it was my friend Chloe Trainer, who recommended I go see it, and I didn't know anything about it, and I was just, wow, blown away.
I love how subtle it kind of draws that relationship. Like, it's not trying to define them as anything. It's just unfurls this longing and friendship.
Yeah, beautiful. Really love that.
But no, I love that recommendation. Everyone should watch Love Song. And you've mentioned a lot of women that you've worked with through the years. But is there someone that you've worked with, like, recently, or kind of that does a behind-the-scenes role that you feel like deserves a shout-out, that's doing really cool stuff at the moment?
I mentioned Chloe Trainer, who runs the Open City Doc Fest. Open City Documentary Festival. She'll tell
me its full title.
And she also runs Overnight Film Festival, happening this weekend. I believe we're both going to.
It's happened. Will it be there?
Oh, shoot! It will be there!
We had a great time!
Oh, it's like great morning! I do New Year's! We had a blast, Chloe. I'm a huge fan of Chloe and her knowledge and her programming. She's just a beautiful human to work with as well.
Is there like a community that you're like a part of that surrounds you, or is this just, you know, women that you've connected with throughout the years?
Yes, actually, a couple of things that come to mind on that. Other women I massively admire. Eloise and Jess, who run Women on Docs.
Okay,
cool. Jess Francis and Eloise. Why can't I remember her?
They both work on Open City as well, don't they?
Jess does, yeah. Jess, Eloise used to be at Vice.
Oh, cool.
And Jess is at Open City. And they run this thing called Women on Docs, where they do film screenings with documentaries usually directed by women. Mm. And it's about sort of shining a light on these amazing films that often don't get UK distribution. So they'll do one-off screenings with Q&As and great panel discussions. And, they're just really fabulous women who just do it all for love and passion, and also working on lots of other own super interesting projects. Mm. When you said I'm a part of a community, there's a couple of things I'm thinking about with today. I'm part of a couple of Google groups for the impact producing community, people working in impact distribution. There's two groups. There's one that I think was originally set up by Doc Society when they were BritDoc. And that's mainly people from all over the world. And there's basically a similar group, just called the Impact Producers Group, I think. And it's people asking questions and sharing knowledge, and that's really useful for sort of supporting one another. And, hey guys, I'm releasing this project, can you give it a shout out? And when you're stuck with something, or, hey, who's the best person to contact for DVDs?
Yeah.
I've also got like a personal WhatsApp group with a couple of women in the industry who I've known probably for a decade, and we're all doing very different roles in the industry, but that's just a wonderful support system and sounding board of friends and colleagues that I can tap into with, guys, I'm having a really tough day, I really struggle with this, any advice? Or, hey, we got nominated for this award, and oh my God, amazing!
Yeah,
there's a lot of love and support there, and I'm super grateful for that group of friends.
How important is that support? Because it can start, I guess it's, yeah, it can be a tough industry to work in.
Yeah, I think super important. Also, when you have it and you've built up that network, you can sort of take it for granted. But in many respects, especially when I was doing more freelance work, you're often feeling like you can feel like you're on your own and you're floundering at times. And when you maybe haven't got work and you're kind of doubting yourself, and I think having a network and a support system of people who will always have your back and will champion you is really valuable. It's invaluable, to be honest. And when you said about like earlier, like, who are my mentors, as much as I look up to some of those people I mentioned earlier, I feel like they've been real champions for me as well, both like outwardly, championing me to me, but championing me to others, which has sort of helped open up doors for me. I'm like super grateful for that and try and do the same, which is why like I think what you're doing is brilliant, because it's an opportunity for people to give each other a shout out and a huge pat on the back, where you're right, there's lots of these faces that, and you don't know about these roles unless we're talking about them.